You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This is NRL Boom Rookies.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the episode of Boom Rookies presented by ESPN. I am Matt Bungard, and with me today, Nick Campton. Hello.
We are deep in the thicket of preseason preview season, which is a difficult thing to say a lot.
We dust off the cobwebs with episode one featuring Benny doing the Panthers chat and Bardo doing the Manly chat, but we will crack on with the third and fourth teams on our list. And joining us right now, all the way from sunny Queensland, it's NRL Physio, aka Brian Sini. Welcome.
Boys, I'm keen to come on this year. I wasn't all that excited to talk to the Dolphins last year with their prospects not looking great. But this year I'm a bit more confident, so it'll be good.
So what one thing before we do... before we dive deep into all of it, what one thing is giving you the most cause for confidence?
Valence Tafare dropping 15 kilos.
He's winning that battle with the Bulls, let me tell you.
Mount Cootha never stood a chance.
He's worn it down. So. He's trained, training the house down. He's trained a mountain down.
Yeah. Yeah. If they still did those little preview booklets in the papers, he would be this year's won the battle of the bulge by knockout guy.
And I'm all about we'll get into the analysis and all that kind of stuff, but I'm all about vibes in the preseason, and the vibes of Val Tafare stripping down kegs and looking good, that's all I needed.
Stripping him down, taping him up, he's doing it all.
What can't he do? The Dolphins, I think it's fair to say, exceeded expectations last year. I mean, a lot of people were predicting them to run last, second last, around that area.
Who would predict something stupid like that?
No idea. But they started the season with a bang with that huge upset, causing Coltrane Cup chaos, might I add, back in round one against the Roosters. I know it kind of petered out towards the end, Brian, but you never really hit the heights of those first few weeks again. But by and large, you have to be delighted with how last season went, given how we thought it was going to go in the preseason.
Oh, mate, it was beyond what, I mean, any of us expected, but I think especially being a Finns fan and sort of going in with not much. I think if you listen back to the podcast, I was just like, look, I want to get excited about some players, some young players, all that kind of stuff. But nothing beats winning, hey. Like, I think and winning games when you weren't expected to win is even better. Sharing it with my daughter, I think as we spoke about at different points, like, just that kind of thing. There was a real good, I'll go back to the vibes, there was a real good vibe about the team. I think at different stages, the depth was always, like, there were plenty of issues, but I think depth was the biggest one. And once, I think, like, losing Tommy Gilbert was huge, and Sean O'Sullivan, like those two guys kind of, I think really derailed our season because the depth behind them just wasn't great. But it was an awesome inaugural year for a team that didn't even make the top eight and weren't, they're no Melbourne Storm. They're not going to win a comp in their second year more than likely, but they're still.
Spoilers.
But yeah, it's just good times. It's like I had a lot of fun last year, and for a footy fan who kind of had floated between the Bronx and the Cows and the Queensland teams and stuff like that, like to actually have that pure fandom, I think was really cool last year.
It was pretty remarkable, I thought, how quickly the general focus of the Dolphins went from in the preseason, we're all a bit cynical about it. I don't think anyone thought they were going to do that well. Like, we all bagged out the signings. We all bagged out the jerseys. Like, I didn't feel like there was a great sense of excitement. But then watching that first game and they run out on the field and then they pull off the Suncorp Coltrane disaster. Like, honestly, from that day, I was 100% in on the Finns. I couldn't believe that I'd ever been so cynical. I couldn't believe that I'd been anything other than extremely excited for what was going on. And while, you know, the excitement sort of petered past that midpoint of the season as injuries crept up with them, I do think that that early part of the year is so important. Starting well, showing a lot of spirit, establishing themselves as a real footy club, not some strange expansion team, not some unloved new franchise that's going to take 5 years to even be semi-competitive. They came into the league and it felt like they'd already been here a long time. It felt like they already had a great history behind them. I think that the toughest trick to pull with an expansion franchise is making them feel old and new at the same time. Like, they're always going to feel new, but if you can have a bit of a lived-in quality, if you can have sort of a bit of an identity beyond just we're the new boys, that goes a real long way. And that got summed up, I think, by at that first game when the People's Republic of Redcliffe travelled south to Suncorp Stadium and started chanting Redcliffe midway through the second half. You know, once that happened, I was like, all right, this isn't, with due respect, this isn't the Titans, a team that's still trying to sort of fight for their place in the league after almost 20 years. The Dolphins felt settled. They felt like part of the furniture. And that's so important because it opens the door for people to view them as a real club and view them as a real option. You know, we know so much about the recruitment struggles they had before they got into the league. But then if you look at their recruitment class for this year, it's one of the strongest in the league.
Absolutely. You
know? So just getting those few good weeks in can make the world of difference.
Yeah, I think when I had Brian on for an emergency episode after that win, I think we touched on this, but like, you can talk about all the stuff you do in the community. You can talk about all the work you do to put the brand out there and to get the kids involved, junior clinics, all that stuff. But none of that stuff matters as much as winning a few footy games. And I know that sounds very rudimentary, but it's true. It's like the way that the Dolphins came into the league shocked everyone, beat one of the competition heavyweights in the Roosters in their first game, and sort of went on with that for a few weeks before, as you said, injuries and their depth issues caught up with them a little bit in the second half of the season. It's something that other expansion teams and other sports have had mixed success with. Like, you look at the GWS Giants, for example. They, like the Dolphins, signed this legendary coach to come in and oversee things, but they were absolute dog shit for 3 or 4 years. They got pumped. They were lucky to win a game or two. And as a result, no one cares about that team. The contrast with that is the Wanderers, of course, who came in and made the grand final in their first season. And before the A-League kind of, you know, started on this rapid decline that it's continued on in the last few years, they were also a very hot ticket in Sydney. The Dolphins have a chance to be far more like the latter than the former. And I feel like the way they played in the first few weeks of last year, coupled with the guys that they have signed for this year, puts them in a really good chance to really establish themselves as, you know, the next Queensland sports team that actually has a lot of impact and a big footprint with the general public up there.
I probably even underestimated myself kind of how much of a benefit it was to be an established, even though it was a Q Cup side, to be an established club coming in. Like, because you talk about the Titans, like, they're just a fresh entity that have grown up out of nothing. And I think it'll be really interesting to see how the next expansion club goes, whether it be Perth or PNG or whoever it is. But just, I think the fact that the Dolphins have come from an established club, and to Nick's point, like, they have, even though they aren't the Redcliffe Dolphins, they have that sort of identity that they've grown up from, I think has been a massive benefit to them.
I'm not being funny. I also think fins up is a huge part of it.
Mm.
It's a fun thing to say. Putting the hand up there, getting those incredibly cheap plastic fins that won't biodegrade for 10,000 years.
Drinking out of them.
Putting them on your head. Oh, man, I went up to the first Dolphins Broncos game last year, right? Work flew me up through it for it. It was amazing. Like, a night I'll remember for the rest of my life, and a night that I think changed rugby league in Queensland forever. Managed to Shanghai one of the fins, brought it home, had all the boys over a few weeks later for a triple header on the Sunday. And the only rule was, as soon as you entered, you had to drink a beer out of the fin.
Was it the most airtight vessel? No, but we had a good time, and that's all that matters.
No, it was fucking radioactive the next morning, I'll tell you that. I had to call hazmat to come and get rid of it, man. But one thing you can't get rid of is the optimism surrounding the Dolphins season this year. I think there's a tremendous scope for improvement in this squad.
Mm.
Bri, what are you sort of looking at as the major areas or the major players who can really go next level this year?
Yeah, I just think the outside backs is huge for them, because as much as we look, I will talk, and I'm sure Campo, you're the same, I'm happy to talk about the Lee Cousins until the cows come home about how fantastic they are. to have them, so, like, to go from them to having, like, a Herbie Farnworth and an Averillo, you know, these kind of guys, that is a big step up in, like, star power, in quality. I think having that service out there is going to be huge. The development, I was really, really happy with the development of some of the younger forwards last year too. Like, I thought Lemuelu came along in massive leaps and bounds. He was one of our best forwards, our most explosive forwards. By the end of the year, he's going to be a bit slow to start because of that knee injury. But someone like him sort of, you know, growing another leg again on that edge is just going to be huge. So I think there's really good youth there. We've bought really, really well, as you said. I think there's a few really solid buys. Flegler's obviously going to be huge as like that young, you know, forward leader that they all want to come off. You know, combine him with Tommy Gilbert, there might be a few penalties and a few sin bins in there between those two. But yeah, I just think I look around the park, probably the halves are somewhere where I think they've really got to kick forward. Like I think everywhere else it's really looking on the up, and like I will sing Isaiah Katoa's praises, you know, as long as you want me to. But I think I'd really like to see him take the next step this year, because I think if he doesn't, as weird as this is to say, I thought Cody Nikorima played pretty well at 5'8 last year. Like, there weren't all that many defensive signs that were good, but, you know, he definitely laid on some good tries. He was good in attack for them. So I wouldn't like to think that Katoa will be going bad enough that Cody can replace him. But yeah, that halves is probably the big one that I want to see a bit of a pickup from the Finns for sure.
Definitely, yeah, think we can go on, Mungus.
I was going to say, yeah, he really impressed me last year, Katoa, and you just don't want to get into a situation where he doesn't kick on this year. And I don't think really he could ask for a better sort of network of coaching, especially Wayne Bennett, in terms of like the support that he will get, that if he need, you know, whether to use the carrot or the stick at various points in the season. There's no reason to not expect him to improve, but obviously we have seen this with young Haas before. So I agree completely that I think that is the biggest question mark going forward, but you have to be hopeful that he is more than capable of making that leap. I mean, he played really well last year, and this is a guy that's came into that position with a lot of pressure. This is a guy that had never played first grade before, who'd spent, what, 2 years being talked about as, what, the greatest teenage halfback prospect in Australia. And, you know, I think he lived up to those expectations last year, and I'm really excited to see what he can do in 2024.
It's an interesting one. I thought he started the season really, really well, but then once Sean O'Sullivan went down and Katoa, that's almost true, by necessity, got pushed into being that main playmaker role, I think it was probably a little bit too much for him that early. And then the rigors of a long rookie season sort of started to tell as well. But you mentioned this before, Bri, you know, O'Sullivan only got 14 games in. Jeremy Marshall-King only got 15 games in. So all of a sudden you're having a lot of changes at hooker, you have a lot of changes in the halves. It's not the easiest environment for a young half to sort of find his way in. So if they can just sort of get a bit of stability in those key positions around him, like, we kind of know what Sean O'Sullivan is at this point. He's a consummate professional, gets the team around the park really, really well. Jeremy Marshall King, one of the great improvers across the entire league over the last 3 or 4 years. You've got the hammer out the back, like, you know, what more needs to be said? There's going to be more weapons for Katoa on the edges. You know, you mentioned Connolly Lemuelu. He's a player I'm a tremendous fan of as well. And then the two centers this year are going to be Herbie Farnworth and Jake Averillo. And I guess if you have some Park Avenue sensibilities, you could say that they're better options than Brenko Lee, but I wouldn't say something like that. Like, yeah, sure, Herbie Farnworth was the best center in the league last year, and Brenko Lee played 17 games and didn't score a try, but I know who I'm going with.
Mate, if they're playing in Queensland, I think I looked it up for a G-Up Twitter post one day, but Edric and Brenko have never lost a game when playing in the same side in Queensland. So,
Brian,
I
text you every time that happens. I say, like, the streak lives.
How many games does that streak up to?
Oh, look,
it started with one fateful Origin decider, Matthew.
Of course. Is Corey Allen involved in this in any way?
No, because he didn't have the gumption to come up to Redcliffe with the boys.
You should have, Corey.
Should have gone to Redcliffe. We're having a laugh, but Farnworth, I did think he was the best center in the league last year. And I think he's found such a great mix of yardage work, where I think he was top 10 in meters gained across the season, and then also with his great attacking stuff, which we all know really well. I think everyone's expecting him to be a big success, but I'm very, very excited about what Jake Averillo can do for this team as well. I thought in a really, really bad Dogs side last year, He was the closest thing there to a constant threat, and he's actually one of the very few players who I thought improved on his season from the year before, and probably their best player over the course of the year. And I think it's clear the sort of physical abilities that he's got, and he's got a lot out of himself despite being in some not so great situations at Canterbury. The idea of him getting sort of the Wayne Bennett shine is really, really exciting to me. I think he could be set for an absolute monster season.
Yeah, no, he was one who I was really surprised to get, if I'm honest, because I thought, I don't know if he's a Bulldogs junior, but I know he has a lot of history with the Dogs. You know, like I knew that they valued him a lot at the Dogs from everything that was coming out of there. So, yeah, I didn't think they were under that much salary cap stress. So he was one that I just couldn't believe when I saw it. And the more I kind of paid attention to him as the season went on, a bit like what you were saying, I thought he just was a shining light in that dog side. And I'm super keen to see what he can do. I think, it makes it that it won't be super obvious every time Herbie ball. Like, we're not just throwing the ball to Herbie. Like, it could go either way because Jake, I think, will provide, it might not be quite as to the heights of Herbie in terms of an attacking threat. But yeah, it's super exciting to have a real weapon on either edge.
Mm. They haven't made a huge number of signings, but the ones they have made are all very impressive. I think those three guys, Avarillo, Farmworth and Tom Flegler, we haven't really talked about yet, all obviously established first grade players. And then in the latter two cases, established stars, I would say. And I mean, looking at getting Flegler in there, Bri, along with getting Gilbert back after his injury, how are you feeling about the forward pack as a whole? Like, because I look at it and I think that, like, if you get 20 something games out of Jeremy Marshall King as well, and it's looking pretty solid.
Yeah, I think the two holes, they were missing like a real solid, like, younger prop. Like, that was a big, because, and once again, as much as I'm sure you'd be happy to talk about Mark Nichols and how much of a, just a wonderful stalwart he is, I think he's much better coming off the bench as opposed to, being that second starting front rower. So they filled that hole. And then the other hole was, I think, as much as I love Kenny Bromwich, I think him playing 80 on an edge, just probably not the best design for a team in 2024. And Lemuelu, his emergence has just allowed now for Kenny Bromwich to kind of float, between that. I think he can play a bit of ball playing lock. He can play on the edge a little bit. So I really feel like those two holes have been plugged well.
Absolutely. So the Dolphins pack going into that inaugural season, they had a lot of war horses, a lot of guys with a lot of runs on the board. And I actually think on the whole, when everyone was fit, they did quite well. They probably sort of outperformed a lot of expectations. I think the change of scenery did a lot of blokes a lot of good. But once Tom Gilbert went down, that lack of sort of explosive power in the forwards was really, really apparent. I thought Gilbert was the club's best player through 11 games. I know he was one of the real breakout players.
He was the
players.
Heart and soul too, mate.
100%. Yeah. So to that end, adding Flegler and getting Gilbert back, it really does address those weaknesses. They still have all the old guys with all their cunning and all their dad strength and all that sort of deal. But now they've got in Flegler like a test and origin prop and like a bit of a wild man, and they needed a wild man, and they've got Gilbert, another wild man. I feel like you're right. They've really addressed the shortcomings of that forward pack. And we've talked a lot about their player depth last season. They used 32 players. It's the second most of any team in the league. And they probably had the worst depth of any team in the league. But by just putting a little bit of that mustard on top of the roster, all of a sudden guys who were every week starters last year now become backups. Like, for example, Ewan Aitken, who played nearly every single game, I'm assuming he'll drop back to the bench or something, and then that's really good cover for center or second row. So by getting these stars in, your depth improves because they move to the top of the ladder. So I think you're right. Like, there were some pretty clear issues for this roster last year, and they haven't just taped them over. They've like welded them shut. It's good stuff.
Yeah, no, it's got me really, really hoping that they can get a bit of injury luck, because I think if they can, especially in those spine like pieces, I just think that, they could really challenge for that top eight, which would just be huge in their second season.
Yeah, I think there's no reason not to expect them to be in and around that. I mean, we'll get to our predictions at the end, but I completely agree with everything both of you just said, that they're they're looking a lot more formidable on paper this year. I know the games aren't played on paper, but if they can just avoid an injury crisis, I think like they, this is it. Like, because last year, right, losing anyone was an injury crisis. Yeah. You're like, oh shit, how are we going to do this without Mark Nichols? But this year, you can afford to lose a couple of guys, and you've got good cover. Guys like you and Aiken, who Campo just mentioned, who probably will be on the bench to start the season. Like, there's good cover in a lot of spots where, over the course of a rigorous rugby league season, you do lose guys because the miles add up. And just having those guys is such an underrated aspect of an NRL club. It's why the clubs that have been at the top have been there for as long as they have. It's because they can have guys who can come in for a week or two and just do a job, just fill a hole. And you didn't really have that last year. And now, yeah, I think you kind of do.
Yeah, it's competition for spots is huge. Like, you know, as Campo said, you've got Ewan Aitken there. You've got a guy like Ray Stone, you know, who, once again, you talk about the heart and soul, like, he was massive for the, I guess, the ethos of the club last year. Like, he's not assured a position. When Lemuelu's fit, Kenny Bromwich might even have to start off the bench, you know, these kind of things. So there just is that little bit more competition for spots. Cody Nikorima's floating around. You know, the ghost of Anthony Milford's there somewhere. Like,
I can't,
you know,
believe he's still on the roster. I've got the roster in front of me now, so I can just sort of like, yep, look at it at will. And the first name on the list, A. Milford, I was like, holy shit.
And I saw something like an article the other day where it's like, oh, Wayne's put the gauntlet down to Milford. He's got to prove himself. And I'm like, are we not past this? Are we not? Like, surely we're past Milford trying to, as sad as it is, like, you know, he was obviously such a fantastic player, but he's just not that guy anymore. Yeah, so like, that cake's baked, man.
Yeah. He's fine to have on the roster as a backup, yeah, you know, as to what we sort of said before. With these shows, Bri, we always like to pick out a young player or an emerging player for people to keep their eye on. It is an older roster, but are there any sort of young fellas that you're really, really keen on in this Dolphins side?
Yeah, so I think Jack Bostock is probably the big one. He's been spoken about a bit in the preseason as to, like, it's looking like he might jag that wing spot in round one. We all know how we like our, you know, comparisons, our young Darren Lockyers or our young Alfie Langers, but he really does have that Campbell Graham kind of game about him.
Ooh,
like,
I like it.
There we go.
I like it. Now, that's a slick comparison.
I don't know if you heard the Patreon episode of Camp on I did a couple of weeks ago, Brian, but we talked about having more comps to players a tier further down, and the next Campbell Graham is a fantastic one.
Yeah,
so like, you've understood the assignment.
Now I'm excited.
Yeah. So yeah, I he's tall, he's rangy, good. It looks like he'd be really good in the air. I haven't seen a lot of him play. I saw a few of his Q Cup games last year, and he just looks solid. He looked like he needed to put a bit of meat on the bones though. So hopefully he's done that over the off season. But he's someone who I'm just really excited to see go around. And then probably the other one, once again, I don't know a lot about him, but just everything I've heard is that Oren Keeley, I think, from come up from the Knights, I believe. So, yeah, everything that I've heard about him, he could be a really, really solid purchase for them as a younger forward who could really become something. So, yeah, I think there's a few guys coming through. But, yeah, probably Bostock's the one who I think could potentially start from round one. And the wing, that wing spot, I mean, Tessie New doesn't really do a lot for me. You know, Edric is there, and I like, as much as I like Edric, I'd prefer him with Brenko next to him, as we've spoken about. And then I think the only other one, well, look, he will have to beat out Val Tafare for that wing spot. So that if he can overcome Val Tafare, he's probably going to win Rookie of the Year. So that's all I would say.
Oren Keeley, yeah, man, like, you better be tough as shit with a name like Oren.
Yeah,
you know, it sounds like a geological term. You know, it sounds like a type of rock.
Yeah, I'm sure he is. Yeah. But I like that comp a lot, Brian. I'm looking forward to the clickbait website headlines now. NRL influences huge rookie comp to grand final hero. So
NRL physio Brian Senior has not added insult to this injury.
Colorful rugby league character.
Oh,
Brian,
I like
Sini.
That. I like that. Yeah. The young fella I'm really excited about at the Dolphins, he only played a couple of games last year, but I really like the look of Max Plath. So he had one game off the bench, and then he started the final game of the season against the Warriors, but he had a really good year in the Q Cup. He had a really big preseason, enough so that he got re-signed on a three-year deal, I think, at the start of December because they were so impressed with his attitude. And while they have, like, the Dolphins have a fair few people who can sort of cover at hooker if Marshall King was to go down, like they've got Harrison Graham, who I think was the club's first signing. They could put Cody Nikorima in there for a second if they have to. I think Mason Teague's played there a little bit. So has Ray Stone. But I really like the look of Max Plath. He'd be someone to keep an eye on. And then another guy who's not a young, or he's not old, but I wouldn't say he's a young fella. I think Josh Kerr's going to have a monster season.
Mate, you should have seen him at the fan day. I did not even recognize him. I was walking around and I was like, who is that? Like, who have we signed? Josh Kerr, if Val Tafare stripped 15 kegs, Josh Kerr stripped 20.
I'm only going to say Josh Kerr's picked it up.
I was talking about it the other day. They always used to say, oh, he can play on an edge when he was at the Dragons. And yeah. I was like, mate, he's way too big to play on an edge. Like, he just is. Mate, I saw him the other day and I was like, holy shit. Like, he reminded me of like a rugby union second rower, like, because he's so tall. Yeah. But really, like, rangy and just really skinny. So I'm like, well, like, I assume that's what they wanted to do with him over the offseason is trim some of the fat. And he looks like a different person.
Kerr's a little bit like Avarillo, where I think he's done okay in a team that probably wasn't doing that great. Now, I don't think he's sort of been in a great coaching environment to sort of just get the best out of him. But I know he has a really, really good attitude. You guys will remember that. He was in that extended Queensland squad in 2020, the worst team ever. And every year they give out like the Tosser Turner medal for like Queensland spirit or whatever.
The Mitch Marsh Award.
Yeah, pretty much. And he got it without playing a game. Like, that's sort of how good he was around the boys. And if you have that sort of team spirit in you, if that sort of work ethic in you, then you almost always do really, really well under Wayne Bennett, you know? So I know he got there in the middle of last year, played a few games, but I think getting a preseason in up there, I reckon it'll go a long, long way. So I'm not saying he's going to be churning out 100-plus Supercoach scores, but I think he's going to be a really effective contributor for him this year.
With me on this show, mate, that's all you're going to get is Supercoach people listening in to see if I give any injury, you know, inside injury info. So you better be ready.
Yeah, so Brian, I'm not sure if you've across how we're selecting this year's team of the podcast. I would bloody love the Dolphins to be the team of the podcast, but if people miss Monday's preview, what we're doing is I'm going to Vegas for the games. I'm going to do one spin on roulette. Each guest we're having on is picking a couple of numbers on the wheel. If their number comes up, they're the team of the podcast. So the Dolphins did not make the finals last year, Brian. You get three slots on the wheel.
We're going to go 12, 13, and 25, Matt.
Okay. Well, I got some. Well, 13 is my birthday and the number I always bet on when I walk into a casino for the first time. Put $10 on 13, 14, because that's my birthday and my wife's birthday. So,
yeah, well,
I very much hope the team of the pod will be the Dolphins.
That is my wife and my two daughters' birthdays, mate. That's about as good as it gets.
Having it in the family.
Indeed. So, first big swing of the year, I've got them in. They're eighth on my ladder. Fins up, baby.
The way that I'm sort of seeing the ladder this year, I think there's the best four teams in the comp and I'm pretty locked into them to being in the top four. I think there's two teams that are pretty clearly worse than everyone else, then another team that I'm not that high on. But then everyone else from about fifth down to about 13th, I can see making the finals. And I've got the Dolphins right in the middle of that group. I've got them in ninth. But if they made the eight, I would not be surprised in the slightest. I think this is a squad capable of doing it. I think Wayne Bennett is about to go on one of his season-long I want a new job type tours. And the best way to sort of secure the next thing is to go well with the current thing. So I think he's going to coach his ass off. I think they're going to play their asses off. I've got him in ninth, but again, I wouldn't be surprised at all if they make the eight.
I do love that you're qualifying that. Like, it's this big jump, one spot on the ladder. I'd love the reverse if you pick them ninth, but you'd be like flabbergasted if they finished eighth. Ninth? Sure, but eighth? No. I can't see it. Brian,
well,
what about you?
Mate, it's just like that when you make the finals, but I guess you've forgotten that.
I have forgotten what that feels like.
I've got to put him in the eight. I think I was horrible. I might have, you know, tipped him to run last year. So I'm going to say eighth. I'm going to be a bit more good positive man. This year and hopefully, yeah, get along to a few more wins.
All right. Thank you so much for coming on, my friend. We will see you very soon.
No worries, guys. Thanks for having me on. Fins up.
Fins up, bro. Baby.
And joining us now from AAP, Raiders man, the pride of Huddersfield, George Clark. Hello.
Hello, Matthew. Hello, Nicholas.
What's going on, mate?
Waiting for the footy season to kick off. Make a welcome change from covering the A-Liga.
How's that been going?
It's long and arduous. Well, it's good when coaches decide they want to take issue with everything.
It's true. I did enjoy that ball definitely not going over the line.
Yep.
And them saying, oh, why doesn't the A-League have goal line technology? And I'm like, why don't they have many of the things that expensive leagues have? Well, why are they playing at Campbelltown Stadium in the first place?
Well, please no shots at my beloved MacArthur FC Bulls of MacArthur, who I've supported since I was a boy.
Mm.
But like, there's still another 3.5 months to go of the A-League season. So there's plenty of time to discuss the Wellington Phoenix and the North Queensland, Gold Coast United, Fury, and all of those. Please stay on task.
Okay, I apologize. Instead of that, we'll go to an equally pointless lime green franchise as the North Queensland Fury in the Canberra Raiders, who've won the same number of premierships since the North Queensland Fury were incepted.
That's nice of you, Bungard.
Hey, he's bought his fighting boots today.
Let's not forget which of the... Are two teams being discussed?
Yeah, yeah.
The podcast made the eight, but one of them is a big club, huh? So
that's true. Yeah, I mean, yeah. Hang the banner, Canberra Raiders Week One Finals participant 2023.
Well, we just have so many of those final participants. Like we're running out of room, you know. Like
yes,
there are not enough walls in Canberra.
is that because they've all been trained down by these boys who've got fire aspirations?
Can a wall be trained down?
Well, if the house is getting trained down, presumably the walls are part of the house.
That would have to be part of it, yeah.
I would imagine that's the first part to go, you'd think.
I'm no structural engineer, but if Trey Mooney ran at a wall, I reckon the wall doesn't last.
I think that's fair.
Walls have a great lifetime record against, like, people. You know what I mean?
True.
Like, you know, there's fellas out there who, like, punch walls and stuff. The walls never lost that battle.
Hmm.
It takes a whole summer of training to defeat it.
Yeah. What's the like thickest wall you think like the most powerful runner in the NRL could run through? Like what's it made out of? Like, do you think they could run through like a drywall, for example?
Josh Hodgson he successfully ran through a door.
Okay. What was the door made out of?
He wasn't the hardest runner in the world. So
was it a pine, a willow?
Contrary to media reports, I was not there at the time.
Oh,
Matthew,
okay.
So
right.
I could not say.
Yeah. I mean, I'd love to see that in the All-Star Skills Challenge is like the biggest, meatiest dudes in the NRL running into various doors of various thickness.
You'd need a bit of speed. So like I'd want to get someone who's got like a bit of burst over 10 meters. Like a Sofa Solomon is probably not picked to go through a wall.
Maybe this is another idea for grand final day, huh? You know, you get the running through the wall, you get the 100 meter sprint, the fastest guys, you know, that old chestnut. You bring back the Bears, obviously, and all three.
Gotta bring back the Bears.
The
country footy's dying. Like, you know, we just hit all the.
We'll delve into this at a later day because it's not the time, but like, how did they just arbitrarily just go, well, North City Bears have 200,000 members and we can't ignore that? It's like, what? No sporting club in Australia has 200,000 members.
Much more reasoned and clear-eyed take on the Bears, I'd encourage you all to go read Ben Horn's article in the Daily Telegraph. It should be in tomorrow's paper. It's up online now. Ben, he's a great Bears man, and he actually knows what he's talking about with this stuff. So go check that out if you want to talk about that. But from one dead franchise to the franchise that refuses to die, George is a Raiders man, so that's what we're here doing today. There seems to be an expectation that the arse is going to totally fall out of the Raiders this season. I think they are fourth longest in premiership betting.
Outrageous. Like, teams like the Bulldogs and the Dolphins are shorter odds to win the premiership. Like, ridiculous.
To me, this is something very familiar because nearly all through my life, even after a season where the Raiders did okay and made the finals like they did last year, they would always be tipped to either win the wooden spoon or finish right near the bottom the following season. George, as a newer Raiders fan, this is a new experience for you. How have you found it?
I kind of, despite everything this team does to me, I still find reasons to be positive about what they can do. So, like, you know, last year they scrape into the eight playing pretty much garbage football at the back end of the year. Didn't go to Amy Park, so didn't chalk up a win. Had to go to Newcastle, lost. That was the Jack Wyton game. But Jack Wyton's gone. And like most people will go, oh, you've lost a rep player. That's a really bad thing. But he just wasn't ticking the boxes for what they needed for a player in that position. So kind of a new era begins. And I'm quite upbeat. Like this is probably like the end of kind of a chapter of the Raiders I've known since I've been here. You know, like Papali, Rapp and Elliot Whitehead are all at the back end now. And you're probably looking to those guys like Tarpanay and Hudson Young and Corey Horsbrough kind of established themselves. And it's all, I guess, about them taking the next step and the other guys coming beneath them, which gives me confidence. I think so much of this year, though, just depends on if Jamal Fogarty can stay fit. They're in with a fighting chance because he's got a great kicking game. He's the only settled member of this spine, which petrifies me, but also kind of excites me in some other ways, like that appeals to the perverse parts of my mind.
The Raiders live on the cutting edge of terrifying, exciting, and perverse. Yes. Where those three sensations meet, you will find a lime green jersey.
It's like a Dali painting, really, it is. So
a Dali painting that could explode at any moment without notice.
That's true. But no, I'm like people always say, you know, they're gonna finish down the bottom end of the table. But every year they kind of confound expectations. You know, they've got a really solid pack. I think the backline's full of guys who, you know, are ready to establish themselves at the top end of town. And I guess the only real question mark I have over them is the combination of the 9-6-7-1.
You've hit on a lot of things that I want to sort of dig into there, but let's start at the start with Whitehead, right? If you guys are out reading a lot of season previews at the moment, and I know you all are, none of us can help it. Like we're all desperate for footy stuff after the long and pointless summer. The phrase I keep coming up with when I read Raiders ones is the roster has a lack of star power, right? And that to me is just code for, I don't watch the Raiders a lot, so I don't actually know a lot about their players. So I don't know who are the good players on the roster, so I don't think they have any stars, right? Whitehead was the team's biggest star and had been for a long time. I don't want any of this to come across like sour grapes or anything like that. I wanted the Raiders to keep Whitehead, even though I think he'd underperformed pretty badly, especially over the last two seasons. And like George said, I just don't think his skill set was really fit for purpose for what they needed from that position. You know, I think he'd had a lot of times over the last two seasons where he just sort of drifted through games. He wouldn't really attack matches the way that you would need your chief playmaker and theoretically best player to do so. Canberra's record without Whitehead over the past five seasons is 11 wins and two losses, which is a staggering thing to hear about a guy who, again, is theoretically the best player on the team. So while, again, I wanted Whitehead to stay, I would have been happy if Canberra gave him that $1 million contract, even though I think it was too much money, because I think part of what Canberra has to do is they have to look after the guys that have done a lot for them. They run a little bit differently to a lot of other clubs. Having said that, now that he has left, I am kind of excited for the possibilities that opens up. And chief among that is the guy George mentioned, Jamal Fogarty, who I really rate as well. And I think he's still just scratching the surfaces of his talent. You know, I think about some of the games he played last year, some of the stuff he was able to do with his kicking game. Like when they played the Broncos earlier in the season, Whitehead's out, Fogarty's the lead playmaker. And in a yardage battle, he outkicks Adam Reynolds. It was a really difficult thing to do. There was a game up at the footy stadium against the Roosters where, again, he just totally kicks them to death. He's got the capabilities to have one of the best kicking games in the competition. He's also a really good runner and a really good passer. If they can find a way to sort of empower him and really bring out his very best football, I agree with George. I think it could be a real breakout season for him. But the tough part, as always, is Ricky Stewart's weird with halfbacks. He has been his entire coaching career. But if somehow it can all come together for Fogarty, I'm expecting a monster year. It could be a real career year for him.
Is it possible that Ricky wants to ensure that his legacy as the Raiders' greatest ever halfback is never even remotely broached, and that's why he repeatedly sabotages the position?
Well, he's doing a fine job of it. if that is his objective, yeah.
Yeah, well, that might explain why he let Matt Frawley go over the offseason. So, but yeah, I think we saw an evolution in Fogarty. Like Nick touched on his kicking game. I think the two games which really stand out for me were the two games against the Dolphins last year. So round two, they go up to Dolphin Stadium and there was no one really like kind of exerting themselves and kind of demanding the ball when they needed it. I think from memory, Nick, you're kind of looking, furrowing your brow. And then the one in like round 10 or so in Wagga, and Fogarty was the guy who kicked the winning field goal. And I think that was I want to say Whiten was also playing in that game, and he was the guy who's probably paid twice as much as Fogarty, but didn't kind of step up to the plate when they needed him in both those games, whereas Fogarty was the guy. So, like, yeah, excited to see what you can do. I guess the question, which I imagine you want to get into, is who the hell partners him in six, who the hell plays one, and who plays nine? Because those are the real positions that are in a state of flux. Though.
My biggest problem with your team this year is exactly that, George. And I don't necessarily disagree with everything that you guys have said about Whiten in the last couple of minutes. I think you're right. I think that it was time to move on. I think it was best for both parties to go in separate directions. But that's the main problem for me is Matt Frawley's gone. You let Schneider go the year prior. It doesn't really feel like anyone's massively throwing their hand up to be next to Fogarty. I know you've got MLB Network nanoseconds to potentially partner him after he's come down from Manly. But
KO Weeks, as he's occasionally known.
Yeah, sorry. This is one of our dumbest running jokes, but a streaming service followed by a unit of time. But it doesn't really, you know, fill me with too much confidence, nor does the weird situation with your hooker position that you just touched on, George, where it seems like they're just not picking the guy that most people who watch Canberra play every week think is clearly the best guy or the best rotation of guys.
So who do you think that is, Matt?
Well, I don't think it's Danny Levi. That's my problem. But he seems to be Ricky Stewart's favourite. And then some amount of Wolford and Starling together. I don't really know how you get the balance right. But
see, I think you're right there. Is Wolford. Wolford, then Starling coming off the bench. Mm. You let Starling run at people because that's his real strength.
Yeah,
and then
absolutely.
Think Levi is...
And fighting the law and winning. He's good at that too.
Yeah, he is. And the other guy to mention that is a guy called Adrian Trevelyan, who's played a couple of games.
Oh,
like
006. How could I forget?
Like, really high-rated schoolboy, but like...
Schoolboy player of the year a couple of years ago, right? Yeah, yeah.
It was, yeah. He held that title for 3 years because of COVID.
Because COVID, yeah. I remember the first trial came in 2022 and I was like mad that Campo hadn't told me that there was a guy with a James Bond name in the Raiders setup. Still haven't forgiven him, but maybe 006 can make that leap this year as well.
You've just hit on what is my major concern for the Raiders. I kind of disagree with you, Bungard, and I think that there are exciting options at each position. Like, I think Xavier Savage at fullback would be a really good move, even after the tough season he sort of had away from football last year. I think his talent, his athleticism has been plain to see in the first grade he's played. I think it's also really clear that Wolford starting and Starling off the bench, it's not like a glamour combination, but it's a combination that works for the Raiders. Since Wolford came into the team almost out of nowhere at Magic Round 2022, he'd only signed for the club about a month beforehand. But since he came into the team, when he plays, Canberra's got something close to a top four record, you know? And I know, you know, wins and losses aren't a quarterback stat and they're not a dummy half stat, but that's not nothing. And in some really big spots, he's played really well for them. KO Weeks, or UFC Fight Pass Minutes, as he's sometimes known.
True.
I reckon I've watched every game he's played in first grade. I don't know if he's good or not. It's still way too early for me to say. He hasn't even played that much 5'8 in reserve grade. Most of the 5'8 he has played, or most of the reserve grade he has played, he has been at fullback. But the track record Canberra has had in recent years of getting really talented young blokes who have sort of stagnated, then they come down to the club, work really hard, and then become productive first graders. There's a lot of guys on that list. That's kind of Canberra's Canberra's play. It's the only recruitment play they've really got. So I'm happy to give him every chance. However, I could also see a round one team where Jordan Rapana, who I love, but is also old and crazy, where he's playing fullback and where Danny Levi is starting at hooker and weird stuff happens in the back line and weird stuff happens in the forward pack. It all feels very, very possible to me because Ricky Stewart has this really strange habit of changing things up late in the preseason for difficult to discern reasons. It happened last year with Levi and Wolford. It happened last year with Xavier Savage and Sebastian Chris. And while over the course of the season, the Raiders usually end up finding their best 17 somewhere, how long that process takes is what determines how successful they are. If they don't settle on their best 17 until round 20, then the season's gone. If they can get there in the first couple of weeks, then all of a sudden we might be doing something. So I do think there's a good team here. There's exciting stuff. How long does it take them to find it? I don't know. But you guys will be with me on that journey every step of the way as I slowly spiral down into madness.
It is. So it's
look
quite,
forward to that.
You know, if you can't handle Campo, it is sitting in a dark corner after a 20-point lead has been squandered in round 6. You don't deserve him at his Charhooing at Magic Round. That's just, you got to be there for every step of the ride.
The duality of man.
Exactly. But like, dude, the Savage thing is massive to me. I agree with you. He's looked amazing every time I've seen him. Not necessarily like the full package, but you can see that there's a really talented footballer in there. And it seems like there's a running joke kind of with you and the other people in our Raiders Discord and our Patreon that like Ricky will do anything he can to stop Xavier Savage from playing fullback. And it is kind of maddening to me that because, yeah, Jordan Rapana is he's one of the greatest Raiders of all time, been an amazing club servant for a long, long time. But it's clear to me that if they want to be a premiership contender again, they've got to get a bit more dynamism out of that position. And I think the most dynamic guy they have by a mile is Savage. And it's strange to me to just see this repeated sort of will they or won't they thing with will he pick him at fullback or not? Like and there was a point where he wasn't even playing fullback in reserves last year, right? He was playing on the wing and played a bit of 5-8 too. So it's a real strange situation there, but I really hope that if and when he gets a chance, he plays good enough that there's no possibility of that changing again in 2024.
I was going to make a point there.
Yeah.
Go on, George. If you're talking about him playing on the wing the back end of last year, the one guy who dislodged him because he had a rotten run with injuries and such like all through last year, the guy who came in who kept him out of the fullback jersey in Reggie's was a guy called Chevy Stewart, who again, really good schoolboy. Everything you hear about him is positive. So I'm like, do we know if he's not jumped him to start this year? And obviously, Seb Chris is still suspended for round one. Am I right?
I think round one and round two.
Round one and round two. So you're thinking Rapana will play on the wing with Kotrick to start round one and then go from there. So the spot is essentially Savage's to lose if he can start the year well.
The thing is though, George, I have no idea if it is his spot to lose or not, and I have no idea if like one crazy thing can happen in a trial game or one crazy thing can happen in a training session before round one, and then Ricky will make the big change. You know, like Ricky's not afraid of making big changes, but sometimes I feel like he does it for almost no reason. Like, and for a really good example of that, look no further than the end of last year when he moved Jack Whiten from 5-8 to center. Like he changed up his whole back line for reasons that were never really explained. And he sort of hid behind this talk that Jack Whiten's always been a center and he's just done us a favor playing 5-8 for the last half decade, which
was nice of him.
Like very,
I want him to play half very, back at Souths.
Yeah, I want that, George. I've said that to you.
So I don't know. And I think it's almost pointless to speculate on whether it's going to be Stewart or Savage or Chris, or maybe Weeks goes back there, or maybe Albert Hopper. It's impossible to know. You know, you can't get inside the mind of Ricky Stewart in these in these instances. You know, so if it was me, it'd be Savage. I've heard a lot about Chevy Stewart. I watched him a little bit in reserve grade last year. He was still only 18. He looked really young out there. There were flashes where you were like, "Yeah, wow, this kid's clearly got something." But I think he probably just needs a little bit more time, which, you know, I'd be happy for the Raiders to give him. I don't know what they're going to do. I think anyone who says they know what Canberra's going to do is kind of kidding themselves on that.
The way I feel about the Raiders is, remember the scene in Seinfeld where George, like, nobody knows what this guy's going to do, talking about Steinbrenner? That's kind of how I feel, like, every time you talk about Ricky Stewart's decision-making process. Because it's true, there's not really a lot of rhyme or reason to it. And a lot of the time, it is just a complete waste of time to try and work out what he's thinking. Well, but hey, yeah, it works more often than not.
That's the thing. The Raiders have made the finals 4 out of the last 5 years, you know? And every time they've made the finals, they've either made it to week two or further, or the exception was last year when they went up to Newcastle with an incredibly undermanned team. Everyone, including me, thought they were going to get done by 40. And then they take a team that had won 10 in a row to extra time and nearly pinch it. You know, like, it's just, it's one of those operation successful but the patient died type stuff, except sometimes the patient lives. You know, madcap Dr. Ricky doing things unorthodox.
It's a waste of time.
Kind of like House. I've never watched House, but I imagine that's what it's like.
Yeah, sure. I've also never seen it. Yeah, there's no logic applied to Canberra. It's a rugby league twilight zone where weird shit just happens. And it's a fool's errand to try and rationalize it, but you can still enjoy it.
That's right. And like, if you look at the rest of the squad, it's like George said before, it's really strong. Like, they're going to have Papali'i, Tapane, and Horsburgh starting in the middle. That's a really, really good starting three. That's the sort of starting three that should be able to at least hold their own with just about any pack in the competition. I really want them to have Trey Mooney and Atta Mariotta as the main two guys coming off the bench, because I think both of them took some really big steps forwards last year, particularly in that finals loss to Newcastle. You know, Elliot Whitehead is old as hell, but I think he had a better year than people think last year. They've got Zach Hoskins in, who I think is a really nice fit for them. You look at the back line, Tomoko is one of the best centers in the competition. I think Seb Chris is going to have a monster year if he just slots in at left center. And then your back three options are like Rapana and Hopewadi and Kotrick, who are all at the very least, you know, really good yardage men. So building the team outside in isn't unusual for Canberra, but it feels like the stakes in those spine decisions are higher than ever before.
Yeah, completely agree. And it will be fascinating to see how it all plays out. George, what area, like, you mentioned that the middle forwards there, and I would agree with Camper that is a really formidable three guys that you've got there. What is that to you, the biggest strength in the team as well?
Yeah. My only kind of slight on that is just Ricky's use of them, all because I think at times he can tend to start Papali'i and Tarpane at the same time and then maybe lose a bit of that oomph. You know, when the likes of Gula come on afterwards. So yeah, that's the only slight on that pack, but it's pretty strong pack. You know, Hudson Young should be playing Origin this year again. You know, Zach Hoskin has looked great in the glimpses we've seen of him at Penrith. And I think it speaks volumes to how highly they think of him if he's, you know, they managed to get him out that final year of the deal. Then you even got, you know, Campo mentioned Mariotta, Mooney. There was a kid who debuted at the back end of last year. Puru looked really good. And then they signed another Englishman, Morgan Smithy. So he has looked a really solid lock playing Super League. Don't know how he fits into this team, whether they just see him as a bench player or a starter or whatever. But there's such strong depth there. They're going to be tough to beat up the middle if they can get their rotations and stuff right.
Smithies. What do you know about Smithies?
Go on, George.
Yeah.
Real kind of like gritty Englishman. Kind of, there's a, you know, he's got that kind of niggle in him that he'll push people to the edge. He can actually ball play a bit. So I don't know where they're looking at playing him, because when they brought him over, they said he could play as an edge or a middle. I've only ever really seen him play as a middle. From memory, he hasn't played for England yet, but you kind of imagine it won't be long before he does. And he's only 22, 23. I think my brother might have even played against him. That's how young he is. So he's one of those where it might just be a slow burn. They had a similar guy called Harry Rushton who came over a few years ago.
Ah, the one that got away.
Played one game against Penrith. His parents flew out. They got towelled. And then he never played again. He's gone to Huddersfield.
He was a good player, though. He was a good player.
He was.
You mentioned your brother, Finn, played a little bit against Morgan Smithies. Could Finn still handle him?
Yeah, Finn are just
Finn's large and in charge, man. George is a big dude. He's 6'5".
Yeah,
and Finn's like 6'5", and you know, stronger and tougher than George. So get him coming off the bench. I don't really get what Canberra were looking for signing Morgan Smith is, because they have so many middles already who I think are of first grade quality. But I'm glad you touched on Puru, because if I was putting together my Raiders 17, I'd actually have Puru starting at lock. I'd have Corey Horsburgh starting at prop, and I'd have Josh Papali'i coming off the bench. Part of that is because of another thing you mentioned, that sometimes the Raiders can struggle to sort of stagger the minutes of their best middles. And I think if you have Papali'i sort of leading the charge off the bench, something in the limited times that he's done it in the past, he's done it to great effect. I think three or four of his top 10 meters gained in a game, like of his career best, are when he's come off the bench, like around origin time or whatever, you know? So given he is getting older and you want to sort of get as much use out of him as possible, I'd really like that. Corey Horsburgh had a great year last year, but I don't want him focusing on leading the line defensively. I want him running and passing and offloading and using the full extent of his skills and his aggression. But I do think Canberra need a passer in the middle of the field. It's something they've never really had since that position came into vogue. Horsburgh's good at it, but he's better at other things. And Puru, to me, seems like a natural guy to get into first receiver a lot, lead the line speed defensively, tighten up that middle in a way that Canberra hasn't had in a long time. I don't think any of that's going to happen, but that's what I'm dreaming about at the minute, you know?
Yes, and two guys we've actually touched on, but kind of, you know, when everyone's looking at their best 17s and that kind of thing, there's a lot of guys where you go, you know, quality first grading, you know, top international like Tarpanay, guy who's been around the block like Whitehead. There's two guys we touched on who I really want to like see them get back to their best. One is also forward Emre Guler. He's a massive body. I just don't, for whatever reason, he's not really got going the last couple of years. And on the wing, Nick Kotrick, like Campo and I have discussed about him at length. Like Albert Hopwise played really well at the back end of last year. You're never going to drop Rapana just because he's insane. So like,
what would he do to you if you dropped him?
I think he'd just go play golf and eat McDonald's, wouldn't he? That's kind of all he does.
Well, he might, but like, there's no way of knowing. Like that's John Wick 5. Jordan Rapana gets dropped, and like a trail of destruction through the Canberra hinterlands.
That's when there'd be no walls left in Canberra, huh?
Yeah, absolutely.
What do you want to see from Kotrick? Because I agree with you. I think he's been really disappointing, not just last year, but for a couple of years now. I was checking out some stats over the summer. The year where he averaged the most meters per game was when he was at Canterbury, which I think most people off the dome would say was the worst season of his career. He's someone who hasn't really developed that much since his rookie year, which I think was still his best year in first grade. And he's kind of at that point now where he's got to make a decision about if he really wants to commit to this stuff, you know, because when he played, he got dropped for a while last year. Albert Hopewadi was getting the start ahead of him. And when Kotrick came back into first grade for the last couple of games of the season, he was a lot better. He was good in that game against Brisbane. He was good in that loss to the Knights. But what does Nick Kotrick finally kind of taking a step forward, getting the most out of himself? What does that look like to you, George?
See, you mentioned that Bulldogs year. I don't think he's been the same player since. And I reckon when he's at his strongest is when there's almost a bit of the, you know, the blinkers are on and he just runs, especially in yardage, because he is such a big body and he just would throw blokes out of the way. He'd skittle guys. He'd break the first line of defense on a kick return. And he just didn't really have I don't feel like he's played with that same gusto since he came back. So if you can unlock that. I mean, he only played 13 games last year and scored 3 tries, which for a winger is not a lot. So that's also indicative of Canberra's play. Like, he can't be solely responsible for that. But yeah, just when he crabbed him, when he used to crab in field and he'd just take like three or four
sideways,
with
the
him.
Sideways stuff. It's got to go though.
Yeah.
Like, I'm with you, but he's like, he got this bad habit last year of getting up to the line and then just sort of stepping side to side. Like he was trying to step, but he was confused himself. I'm like, big fella, have you seen the size here? Like, just straight, hard every time. Like, it's a completely wild idea, but I wouldn't be that adverse of him switching to prop and just making it as simple as possible. I'm dead set, man.
Yeah,
just
yeah.
Make it as simple as possible for him. Big Nick, here's what you do, bro. We're going to throw you the ball and you run as straight as you can and you dare him to stop you. Because, like, he's got the size to do it. He's got the athleticism to do it. And it might sound crazy, the idea of a winger playing prop, but it has been done before. Like, Daniel Vito was someone who played wing and bench middle a little bit for the Broncos. C.S. Oleola started out as a winger. It can happen. And if Kotrick doesn't really show me something this year, then that's, I think that's the next move is for his career, as crazy as that sounds.
Wow. Right down the Ockhambor Highway, they call it.
Wind up the windows when you're driving down that road.
There was a time not so long ago that, you know, he was talking, you know, he went to the Dogs to play centre, and that was after he played for New South Wales, played for Australia.
It's a big signing at the time.
And he signed for 5 years, was it, to the Dogs?
I can't remember.
And he was all about, you know, I want to crack at centre. And I guess, you know, players that I think are ready to kind of take the next step this year, this year coming, is another centre in Matt Tomoko. Like, he should have gone in the Kiwi squad at the back end of 22 to the World Cup. Didn't get picked. Last year was amazing. Like, everything you want a centre to do. And I feel like he's now at that age where he's maybe 24, 25. He maybe is going to start to announce himself. And people talk about Canberra not having enough star players. I think he might be one of them.
Well, I'm really
high on Tomoko.
Mate, I am too. I had him in my team of the year last year. I think he's a super, super footballer that not enough people know about. And I think Seb Chris is going to, like how Tomoko had the breakout season at centre last year, I think Chris is going to be a little bit the same this year. Like, it's remarkable when you see the improvement in Seb Chris from year to year, particularly with his athleticism, with his strength, with his power, all that sort of stuff. I think that I'm not being funny. I think that could be one of the best center combos in the league, those two. And it could give Canberra just such tremendous strike on both sides of the field. I'm really excited to see them put it together.
Yeah, there's some really positive things both in the forwards and the backs. But as we've touched on it from the start of this interview, my main issue is still in the halves. I don't know what's going to happen there. It could all work out. And if your forwards are good enough and you've got those strike weapons at the back and they're good enough, then you can get by with your halves only being okay. But that, to me, is the huge question mark for Canberra. And I'm not sure if they're going to hit the heights they've hit in the last couple of years. I know they've been so consistent under Ricky Stewart, and I know they made the finals more often than not. But I just look at the way that team's set up this year. I don't think they've got as much depth in the forwards as they have in previous years. And I don't think that, I know you said a lot of, I know people can say whatever they like about Jack Whiten, including me, but I think that X factor is going to be missed to some degree, and got them in 12th spot.
Yeah. Look, wow, making the finals won't be easy. I think it'll be tougher for them than the last two seasons, just because the best version of this side is going to be a little bit, well, it's not as obvious as it has been in previous years. I've got Canberra in that mix, in that mess of teams who can finish anywhere from fifth to about 14th. And it wouldn't surprise me if they slip down to 10th or 12th or something like that. But if you don't pick your team to finish in the preseason,
what are you doing?
You're a dog and a coward and a piece of shit, and I don't care to know you. So I'm picking the Raiders in 8th.
Nice, George.
Well, yeah, obviously they're scraping by with a gutsy 2-point win against the Dragons in the final game of the season. Heard it here first, baby.
Yeah, I think one other thing is I had a look at their draw, and they've got some really tough games at the back end of the season, whereas in seasons past, they have, for the most part, kind of really kicked on in that post-Origin period where they seem to play the West Tigers and the Dragons 6 times each. But this year they've got Penrith, trip to Townsville, the Roosters, the Rabbitohs, the Warriors, and the Storm, and the Knights, all in the last 10 weeks of the season, along with a couple of easier games. So, yeah, I think that was a factor for me as well. I think that was a factor for me picking them to make the 8 last year, was looking at their draw and just looking at how easy it got, especially in the second half of the season. but that might swing a little bit the other way this time around for them. But we didn't mention any sort of young players that people might not know about, George. Is there anyone in particular that you think could be in the frame to have a big year this year? And Campo, I'm sure you can answer this one as well.
Well, we touched on Xavier Savage, right? It's him. He's the one I want to see really step into that number one jersey and be the fullback. And then, yeah, it's Puri, who Campo and I have also touched on. I'd like to see a bit more of him this year. But I'm sure you're writing the Raiders off and putting them down in 12th. Ricky will be playing this on loop at their center of excellence.
Prove me wrong, Ricky. Prove me wrong.
He's going to call you before you even uploaded your podcast.
He knows.
He's got ears everywhere. We mentioned him a little bit earlier, but I'm all in on Trey Mooney, like 100% all the way. I wanted him in first grade a lot earlier than he was last year. I love the explosiveness he plays with. I love the aggression he plays with. I think he's really mobile. He's got great footwork. It's getting to the point where I'm scared Canberra's going to lose him. And he was linked with a move to the Knights. He's linked with a move to the Sharks.
As well, I think, yeah.
But he's ended up sticking around. I'm all in. I think he's fantastic. He'd be on the bench every single week if I was picking the team. And then another guy who's probably a little less known, Ethan Strange. He's a 5'8" or a center. He played one game for the Raiders last year. They went down to Melbourne and lost 48-2. I watched it in a crackdown in Baltimore. Not a great memory. But I'm a big fan of his. If KO Weeks has a tough start to the season, it wouldn't surprise me if they gave Strange a go with Seb Chris suspended for the first couple of weeks of the season. I think Strange could play a little bit of center there. He's a very classical sort of center, really good at sliding to the outside of his man, attracting the winger, popping a pass, something like that. Really powerful as well. Similar in style to Matt Timokos. So, you know, squat, powerful dudes on both sides of the field. Like, who can't?
Like that.
Who can't enjoy that?
And George, what were we going to say?
But Bungo, can I just actually ask a question of you? Given today, Tuesday the 6th of February, it was announced that Curtis Scott and Joey Leilua, two former Raiders sons, have agreed to fight each other in a boxing match.
Yes.
Which two South Sydney players would you most like to see square off in the ring?
That is a great question.
So past and present, right? Because that's the whole point of this.
All encompassing.
Yeah. Liam Knight versus Jai Arrow.
Why those two? They're just mates, aren't they?
Yeah, that's why it's funny.
Okay.
Okay, but the thing is, Curtis Scott was signed to replace Joey Leilua, and Joey Leilua is really dirty on him.
Okay, Adam Reynolds versus Lachlan Ilias then.
Oh, a couple of feisty bantamweights there.
There we go.
Yeah, no. Who do I hate to play for Souths? And they can fight Garth Wood.
Lambs to the slaughter. Garth from the hood. Wood is back.
I don't really hate anyone that's ever played for South, but if I think of someone, I'll chuck them to the wolves to fight Garth from the hood. Wood, the man who knocked out Anthony Mundine.
Would Tane Men win in a fight against Garth Wood?
Oh, okay.
In the ring, no. On the street, yes. Under the Marquess of Queensbury, Garth's got the advantage, but you know, on the cobbles, okay, and going
I think I would love to see Garth Wood versus Tane Milne. That would be great. Who is better at boxing, a boxer or a crazy man? The age-old question.
Most profitable fight in combat sports history answered that very same question.
It really did. It really, truly did. So, George, we're doing a thing where everyone gets to pick three numbers on a roulette wheel to determine the team of the podcast for 2024, and then I'm going to go on. Do one spin of a roulette reel once I get to Las Vegas. You don't get to pick any numbers, though, because you go for Canberra, and that's Campo's team, and they cannot be the team of the pod. I wasn't even going to bring this up, but Campo said, bring it up to get his hopes up, and then dash them spectacularly. And I said,
You executed this incorrectly. You should have just said that's what you were doing, then allow George to pick two numbers, and then say, great, I don't care, because they can't be the team of the pod.
Oh,
that would have been funny.
Would you like to pick two numbers anyway, George?
Aren't you just going to rig it so it's Cronulla or West?
This was covered on the first preview. How on earth am I going to rig a roulette wheel in a Las Vegas casino? If I was capable of doing such things, I wouldn't be sitting here talking to you, would I?
What if you just sit there for hours and hours spinning until you get the number.
I mean, all right. Well, I'll make sure that we've got some friends going with us. There'll be checks and balances in place. We'll make sure I don't do that. It'll be first bid.
Which casino are you going to do it at?
I don't know. Probably the one we're staying in.
Okay. I don't know. I was just making conversation. I don't know.
Well, do you have a preference? Do you want me to do it at a particular one?
No, I was just asking.
Okay. So I have to pick two numbers.
Yep.
Are there any numbers which are exempt?
Well, the ones that have already been picked, but you can pick whichever ones you want because they're not binding anyway.
Okay, 2 and 9.
Nice. Good job. 2 and 9. Are there any significance to you? Birthdays or what are they?
Yes, my birthday's the 29th.
Yeah, there you go. Well, you could have just picked 29, but sure. Okay.
Okay.
No, too late. Yeah.
All right.
I keep forgetting you only get two numbers because Canberra made the finals last year. That does feel wrong.
But, I feel like you're trying to Mandela effect that finals appearance out of existence.
I am, yes.
Is this being gaslit? Have I worked it out?
No, because again, I didn't tell you that they didn't make the finals. I'm just pretending that they didn't. I've never gaslit you.
One day I'll successfully identify when I'm being gaslit.
All right. Yes. George, anything to promote before we get out of here?
No, I'm good. Thanks.
Yeah. Just keep reading the Dubbo townsfolk and the Queen Bean Gazette or wherever else AAP stories are published. I do love when you share a link from like some random regional website in the middle of nowhere. Is there like a centralized AAP link out as well, or is it just on those places?
Yes and no. The main stories go on our website, and the kind of other ones go, well, everything goes to our subscribers, who I appreciate greatly and keep me getting to write about sport. So yeah, read the stuff and yeah, shout out to all the readers in Maroria and Scarborough and wherever else.
Well, I mean, your stuff appears on ESPN anyway, so I mean,
it does.
More than happy to read it there.
Shout out to Walt Disney.
Absolutely. And speaking of people that we appreciate, the patrons, particularly those in the top two tiers on our Patreon subscription service. If you'd like to support us, now's the best time to do it because we're just getting back into the swing of things. You will get entry into the Coltrane Cup, the best tipping competition on the planet. You'll get an extra show every single week, access to our Discord server, merch discounts, and plenty more. And George will phone you up and do an impersonation of a British celebrity of your choosing. So that's an extra perk just for this episode if you sign up. And thank you to Chris Abnell, Dave, Go Woke, Go Captain Australia, Rocky and Rafi, Stu, Ashley and Martin, Ben Tavoyevich is training the house down, Broncos legend Adam Reynolds, Bruce the Pom, Butsy, Chivak's Snuffleupagus, Dan Cullen, Danny Levi's biggest hater, David, an anonymous backer, Ed Burton, future Clive Churchill medalist, Keon Kolomatangi, I Was Saying Boo Earns, Jerome Luai, Hungy Pitt, Gift Fund, Jason Joe, Joel Wrigley, John, Josh Brandon, Kicks Out of the Comp, Lachlan Hancock, Luke Charles Midmore, Mads, Taylor's Version, Matthew Duggan, Mr. Beefy, Morgan Watkins, my name is Nick Campton, and Rugby Union is my favorite type of rugby, my ding ding dong is hard and I'm sad, never trendy, now four walls are your 24-hour-a-day constant companions, Paul Mack, 78, Reese Brown, Rowan, Rodrigo Eduardo, gold, Roxanne Clark, see you in Vegas, Shunter Ty, the Black Vegetable, the Quiet Man in the Stand, Thor, Tom Hardy, Was, we're now having shouts to everyone loyal to and every listeners, all listeners, please send $5 to at the Matt Bungard on twitter.com and Westlife Podcast. West Tigers are back, baby. Thank you so much for your support to everyone in the lower tiers and to everyone who just listens. Thank you as well. George, I was going to say you're not on here, but I believe you are Danny Levi's biggest hater. I think.
Not me.
But you, Nick, have you subscribed to our own Patreon?
I haven't, but if I was looking to send subliminal or semi-liminal messages,
what about superliminal
leadership? Well, join the Navy. That would be the method to do so. If you haven't signed up for the Patreon yet, please do. It helps keep the lights on. And we're looking to have a lot more content for our Patreon subscribers this year.
There will.
Regular stuff. So last year was a bit intermittent. This year we want to try and give you a bit more value for money. So please sign up.
Thank you. All right. Say goodbye, George.
Goodbye, Matthew. Goodbye, Nicholas.
Say goodbye, Campo.
Goodbye, Bertrand.
And it's goodbye from me.